I believe it's fair to say some little good news about at least the state manufacturing community and the things that some things are going right, by the way. And also after that, we'll hear from the Central Minnesota Manufacturers Association. And speaking of things that are going pretty right, our committee went out last year to Wilmer, I believe, Mr. Gimsey. And we saw some exciting stuff in the paper today where the Defense Department and the University of Minnesota and others have collaborated and taken over that campus up there. I forget what it was, who had it before, but maybe you'd like to. I think that's a success story. What we have to do, and I think a lot of it, things that are going on in life, we got to find some positive things once in a while to talk about. I think that's always good for our spirits and our attitudes, and everything's not gloom and doom. But, Senator, did you wish that, I don't know how many jobs they have out there, but it's a beautiful campus, and I think we're trying to get some state money. It didn't work, but now it's working, I believe, I suppose it is a private-public kind of collaboration out there, but...
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. It's called the MinWest campus. And what it was previously the Wilmer Regional Treatment Center, and it was sold to a private entity, or a portion of the campus was sold to a private entity. And they've really created what is becoming a jewel out there in Wilmer as far as technology, jobs, and opportunities. They continue to grow. I could only venture a guess as far as the number of jobs, but I know it's well over 300, 325.
And growing.
And growing all the time, and people are very interested in that. Thank you for pointing it out.
I tell you, the grounds and the campus are just beautiful setting out there. And right across from the golf course where you play all the time, right? No, I don't know about that. But anyway, I think we'll continue on. The State of Manufacturing, presented by Mr. Bob Kill, thank you very much for coming and share some of good news. And if it's not good news, don't talk to us about it. But no, just kidding. Just kidding. We want to hear all the news. Welcome to the Minnesota Senate.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, thanks for the opportunity to present the findings of the State of Manufacturing 2009 survey. I've asked Tom Mason to join me. Tom was the manager of the survey for us. First, I have to give a little bit of an introduction. Enterprise Minnesota, known to some of you as Minnesota Technology, changed our name in June of last year, work with Minnesota manufacturers to help them achieve operational excellence, compete globally, and grow profitably. And we believe that's what leads to job creation. And I know firsthand with my travels around the state that all citizens, policymakers, and business leaders should really know what manufacturers bring to our economy. That's something we treasure today an awful lot, and that's jobs. Some statistics, there are 8,500 manufacturing companies in Minnesota. Some of them are quite large, but the vast majority employ less than 100 employees. In fact, 3,700 of these companies have 10 or less employees. And they're in urban settings, the suburbs, and all through greater Minnesota. And frankly, the further you get from downtown Minneapolis and St. Paul, the more important they are to sustaining their neighborhoods and their communities. So, therefore, the takeaway is we all have a huge stake in the success of manufacturing. Study after study really confirms that the employees of manufacturers do very well when compared to other sectors. I think some people say they get paid 17 to 18% greater with typically better benefits and a better longevity of employment. And the one thing this poll brought out to us as we travel the state is that manufacturers are pretty cool heads, and even in a down economy, with prospects of an extended recession, which they agree is here, they're not complainers or hand-wringers. In fact, they're probably spending their time right now, except for the few that joined us from central Minnesota, investing in their operations and people so that they can be the first to exploit the recovery. 400 executives were interviewed over the phone. Kind of an outstanding achievement on its own. The largest survey I'm familiar with of manufacturers was done nationally, and it interviewed 900 manufacturing executives. So if you draw a comparison, this was a pretty dense population. of executives, and I stress executives, owners, CFOs, CEOs, et cetera. And as I point out, as you go through the transcripts of those, and I know everyone wants to read the book in its entirety, you will not find one instance of one person complaining about their plight. In fact, in the focus groups that were managed by Mr. Mason to my left, they actually did talk extensively about using the downtime to retrain employees, retool their plants, invest in new equipment, etc. You all have a copy of the State of Manufacturing book if you'd like more. They also are available. That is when we get our new supply in, because the demand for the book absolutely outstripped the number we'd ordered. I think we ordered something like 3,500. But there are more in order, as people, frankly, around the country are interested in it. If you want to get some summaries, there's a website, www.stateofmanufacturing.com. And also enclosed is a little bit of propaganda in our magazine, Enterprise Minnesota. You should all be receiving it because it is a great spokesperson. And, Mr. Chair, we do emphasize the positive in that magazine, I can assure you, because there's a lot of positive that that is happening in manufacturing. I must recognize our partners, because without them, we couldn't have done this. Bremer Bank, Larson Allen, Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and RJF agencies all have a huge passion for small, medium-sized manufacturers. They do understand the needs. They're focused on it. And they made the focus groups be much more successful than we could have possibly on our own. And the assistance financially allowed us to have a great kickoff last Monday. We're about 250 people, and some good press was gotten for this survey. The end result is we believe it helps our own organization, but more importantly, it raises the visibility of the importance of manufacturers in the state of Minnesota just one step higher than it was before. So let's get on to the survey. The survey was done by Public Opinion Strategies. I hired him for his technical help, and look what I have to do.
Yeah, but I tell you, on page 32, there's a handsome guy here.
Right.
I'm Mason Young. Y'all have turned to page 32.
Isn't it shocking what you can do with digital photography now?
A lot of touch-up.
A lot of touch-up.
Okay. All right.
We hired Public Opinion Strategies. They also do Wall Street Journal polling, NBC News, NPR, National Public Radio. Very well thought of. The survey was completed in December in 2 weeks. He would acknowledge that he thought it would take 4 weeks to do it. The response from the executives when called to set up the phone interview, they oftentimes dropped what they're doing and did it immediately, which says they were anxious to get on and get their opinions heard. There was an optimistic part to it, no question about it. Denny Dotson, and I should say Dotson from Mankato, is a 132-year-old foundry, and it isn't your grandfather's blacksmith, I can assure you. A very modern, technically advanced, but he participated in the focus group. And this would capture the essence of a lot of them. They really believe that they will lead other industries out of this recession. That being said, majority of the executives believe we're in for a bumpy ride in 2009. The competitive business environment in Minnesota, gee, isn't this a surprise that they would feel that it might be a little bit off track during this challenging time? And from an economic output for 2009, 56% feel that the recession will continue. There is a broad consensus, nothing unique, between location and size. Oftentimes in these you find that either large firms. And I should point out, we did do some geographical demographics, not in great detail, but we also did firms with less than 1 million, 1 to 5 million, and 5 million and over to start getting some of the demographics and size of the business and also by employees. So across the board, they felt that there was a recession going to stay with us. We're a little bit off the track in the state of Minnesota and some of the things we do for small business, and especially the manufacturers. Interestingly enough, though, this level of anxiety was really pretty positive compared to some of the statistics that have been done recently of the general public. Something like 2% believe that things are going to get better. So that in itself set the stage on the belief that even though things are challenging, We will outlast it. We will take advantage of it. Despite the concern, the executives were very confident of their own future, their own company's future. So you kind of weigh that 56% say that we're in a recession through 2009, but 79%, and that, again, across the board, not really tied to any size organization, said that the future of their firm they're very confident of. And if you look at that on a comparison, it's kind of an interesting disconnect. They say that some of the business guidelines in the state are maybe going the wrong direction, and 56% believe there's a recession, yet they're confident. 40% believe this will be a rocky year, yet in their own firm they feel very strong about the things that they've done. My perception, traveling around talking to manufacturers, it's kind of a simple situation in that the last time we had a tough road, the time before we had a tough road, if they're here today to talk about it, and most of the firms are, they made their firms very lean and very focused on operational excellence. They see this opportunity now to start taking advantage of that because they have weathered the storm of offshore sourcing of products, et cetera. So that confidence, I don't think, is false. I think it reflects what they've been through over the last 15 to 20 years in converting their firms to being very, very competitive on a flat surface we live in.
But that lower left scene there looks good. 80% are confident about the future. That rings well, I think.
Well, they're entrepreneurs. They're small business people. You know, if they felt negative, they should become economists.
However that fits in. But
I'm an economist. I'm an economist.
If I can add one thing there, those of you and all of you are familiar with political polling. If you get a wrong track number, 55 or higher percent, when you're doing a poll and you get a positive response on something, it's an anomaly. It's really an incredible. People think 55% of the people that we interviewed thought that the state was on a wrong track economically, but for their own firms, it's 79%. That's an industry that has some confidence in itself.
I think that's a good, real good number.
Yep. Yeah, at the next, they were not really willing to go out on a limb because they felt that decreasing or staying the same were both in revenues, profitability, and expenditures. But as you move forward, they expect that the changes will not change significantly. And again, they feel like they can weather the storm despite the fact that that they see their decrease increasing before it improves. The couple surprises, and one was, but keep in mind, let's remember this was done in the middle of December. If you'd done it 6 months earlier, we'd have got a different snapshot. If we do it another 6 months, we'll get another snapshot. But in the mid part of December, when the manufacturing executives are asked to rate 14 different factors, healthcare by far was the highest. And as a person that deals with them a lot, it surprised me a little bit. But keep in mind the demographics. The pyramid of manufacturers is a large number of firms, 10 or less employees, a large number between 10 and 50. They're much closer to the cost of healthcare than if you're an executive of a company that had 250 employees. And so we tried to follow the pyramid of where the companies were so we could get a good reflection of small companies, step up, a step up, and a step up. So the smaller the company, one of the focus groups also pointed out that it may have reflected the fact that in December they'd all gotten the bill for what was coming in 2009, and if you were the executive of a small company, that was right on top of your mind at that time. But as you move down to the bottom part of it, one of the things that I think reflects December versus 6 months earlier or 12 months earlier is the ability to attract and retrain qualified workers, increased competition from foreign workers, or lack of quality workers. I personally was surprised that they were as low on that scale. I thought they would be higher. But I think it probably reflects what we all know is going on in the economy. Right now, these manufacturers are not hiring. And I think one of the things we want to take away from this is, are there programs like the Growth Acceleration Program that went into effect 2 years ago that could help small manufacturers get back in that growth curve and get back onto hiring high-paid, high-benefit workers? The healthcare concerns were more pronounced among the smaller, which I already stated. The 3 and 5%, I think, reflects the fact that you get to a certain size of the company that the CEO isn't as closely tied and studying the healthcare. My guess is if a little further drilling down, you'd find that that's a concern, but it certainly says that the very small companies, the less than $5 million, are very, very concerned about their health care costs. Senator Rosa?
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Senator.
Thank you, Rosa. Mr. Chair. When we're saying small, are you saying less than 10 employers? Employees?
Less than $1 million in revenue, which would very commonly equate to that, yes.
Okay. Mr. Chair,
Rosa.
We did do a tremendous amount of work on that health care reform bill last year, and a portion of it was for small employers. And I cannot remember if it was 10 or 12 employees, less than 10 or 12 employees, but there was a Section 125 tax credit attached to the bill and an incentive for employers to sign up on this. I'm just wondering if Enterprise Minnesota is apprised of this and is working with the small employers to get this information out, because we realize that this number of 64% of small employers that are you know, offering health care insurance is going down. It's been going down over the years. So that's a tremendous issue. So, number one, I'm just saying, this is out there. We have passed that bill, and it is moving. And number two, is Enterprise Minnesota doing something with that information?
I'll answer the questions backwards. One, we are not, because we're not healthcare consultants, but it would be a great opportunity to do something like that in here, which goes to all the small manufacturers and highlight that in this magazine. I think it'd be very helpful, and I think they would you'd find it very well read. When we've done any kind of healthcare article in the magazine, it's gotten great readership, so we should follow up and do that. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome.
That's a good point. Sometimes when we do things around here, we assume everybody knows about it, but
right.
In this area, it'd be extremely important to get that message out. If there's small businesses could take advantage of that tax situation that Senator Rosen talked about. So we'd appreciate that, Bill, if you could somehow get that in your.
It'd be a great article and a great service.
And you can get Senator Rosen in the quotes if you'd like.
I'll write it.
She'll write it.
Right.
Oh, I guess that it. Guess
a volunteer.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Continue on.
Well, yeah.
We're tracking this thing here. So if you're, we're down about halfway or so.
You know, it's speaking of healthcare reform. Yet when we go on to the next one, it's obvious that all sizes that manufacturers could do more in trying to focus on maybe a more innovative healthcare plan, a wellness plan, focus on consumerism. They really are struggling, and maybe this some awareness would be helpful there, but they could do more to improve. There's no question about it. It's a little more of a accepted as it is. The one that some people were asked a lot of questions about at the unveiling on Monday was the credit crisis. I think that Eric Wagner from Minnesota Wire and Cable right here in St. Paul maybe feels that in the next 12 months you might see it worsen. This question was raised not about customer credit, but about your own credit. So I think some people felt that if we'd asked it both ways, we'd have seen it something a little bit different in their clients, in their customer credit, affecting their business. But it has not had a major impact. In fact, for a number of them, it was 9% of the executives that we interviewed that really felt that it had. Again, I stress this was in December. Who knows what if we did it in 6 months. But this was a pleasant surprise. I think it also reflects what one of our sponsors, Bremer Bank, said, you know, that they have actually used this time to better communicate with their clients and make sure that there's no surprises. And I think most of small, especially greater Minnesota banks, have not participated in any of the programs because they didn't invest in some in really in risky investments going into it. So I think that reflects why credit is not as big of an issue as you might anticipate. But even when you do put available capital into it, healthcare still is higher. But in the end, you move to the next, they're really pretty much pleased with where they are. One thing manufacturers believe is that their employees all love them. I don't know, there's some manufacturers here that, you know, all would say the same because they're the executives. But when you do go inside of manufacturing firms, you find that they're a very close-knit operation. I think a lot of that is the lean processes that they've implemented that have made better teams. There's a lot of investment in the employee, which therefore says that when the executives discuss their cultures and workforce, a high percent feel that the employees are very engaged. And even during this challenging time when they're cutting back and employees in some cases, they really, really struggle to do that. It's not like it's a number, like a Fortune 500 company might just say we have to get rid of 5,000 employees. To get rid of two in a company of 20 employees, you're talking about 10% of your workforce. Think about that now in a billion-dollar company, what 10% of a workforce might do. So the comparison is it's very difficult. They hire religiously, but they fire very, very slowly when they have to. Executives believe that they have solid. Their employees feel the same. In fact, a huge percent, a high percent, 60-some percent, are strongly in agreement that they have a good relationship with management. And while the larger firms tend to be a tad more rosy, it was pretty universal, very high. And to me, when you go inside of manufacturing firms, I don't think this is delusional. I think that you actually do see that there's a lot of camaraderie, a lot of team training to compete against the competitors from around the world. The processes that they've implemented have really invested in both the processes and the people. So you see that differently than you might if you were in a non-manufacturing environment. But when they wrapped it all up, they felt that stability is key to their employees. Primary reason your firm retains employees is that the employees feel good. It's a good place to go to work. It's a good company. Stability comes out ahead of wages and pay. Yet, and again, this some interesting differences to note that it's more prevalent in the small company, which I think by nature you would believe is more team-oriented when you're in the less than $1 million in revenue. But it's not that it doesn't exist across the board to some degree. Yes. Somewhat of a different opinion. Six different factors as to how to retain employees, and they came up with convenient hours, shifts, flexible work schedules. I'm confident that one of the reasons for this is the fact that there is an aging workforce, and the manufacturers over the last 2 to 5 years have gotten pretty smart at arranging for special shifts to keep this brain power that their company is built around inside the company. And that's becoming more and more important as we go forward because of the number of very experienced people. And as much as we all think that all of our processes inside of an organization are documented, a lot of it exists right in the head of that senior person who's been your quality manager for 26 years or something like that. So I think the convenient hours and shifts is a reflection of that. Because when you go on to how important it is in attracting and recruiting new employees, all of a sudden salary and wage expectations and affordable health care bypass convenient flexible work hours, et cetera. So I do believe it reflects somewhat the aging workforce, which in itself is a challenge as we travel around and work with manufacturers, is whether the economy recovers soon or not soon, we're going to have a big drain of intelligence inside of these organizations that they're trying a lot of things short-term to keep those people with their company because they have so much experience in what they're doing. So despite all that, when you ask the executives what kind of wages expect the last 2 years, there have been quite a few increases, and they expect that there will continue to be a need for a reduced but certainly wage increases to compete over the next 2 years, though as you can see, there's a shift toward staying the same as they try to weather the challenging economy that that we're in. Back to why there's a little bit of a mismatch between those 14 and qualified workers was so low on that. When you go on to finding qualified job candidates, it becomes something that they say is very difficult, whereas before they said, gee, I'm not having the, so I think it does reflect the future view versus the current view. And I can say that as you get further from the metropolitan area, it is very, very difficult to find trained workers that fit the specific needs that they're looking for. Once you get 150 miles from here, finding welders who want to live in Morris, Minnesota, it's almost an impossibility. They're now sending their welding and transporting things back. So despite our challenging economy, finding skilled workers, especially as you get to greater Minnesota, is proven to be continue to be difficult.
Senator Bach, excuse me.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Kill, is do we know if our Minsku campuses, you know, we've got them scattered all over the state, do we know if they're delivering customized training for kind of the greater community's business sector to the extent that they can, or can we do more relative to this issue of businesses not being able to find qualified candidates? Could our Minsku system do a better job of working with the businesses that are in their locale to meet the local business community's needs better than we currently are? I often think that our systems put all of our students into a cookie cutter, and that's what we deliver. And it seems to me that the Minsku system has the ability to be pretty nimble because it is so regionalized. Are we doing enough in that area, or is there more opportunity? Are businesses willing to work with those campuses? I just wonder if we're talking to each other.
Mr. Kill.
Senator Bach, I'm sure that we could all do better in working together, and I think as you go to some of the two-year, I'm going to speak to two-year colleges now because that's really what I think is addressed here. And there's a chart that follows that somewhat addresses that. If I could go to that chart and then come back to it. It talks about the need to attract. It's universal. If you look at the next one, very consistent across different types, different locations, qualified candidates. And one of the contributing factors is the next chart, which talks about the percentage of positions that require education or technical training, which I equate to two-year training, beyond a high school diploma. And on the left side, 57%, but a percentage of positions that require a four-year, it's way below for the college needs. Okay, this chart's a little bit, it's 50% or less, or more than 50%. So very few needs for four-year degrees, but an increasing need, as you see, the two-year need goes up more rapidly than the four-year. And I think there's been a somewhat of a, and I won't say it by Minsky, but there's been somewhat of a push toward the service industries versus manufacturing when kids could much more fit into this if they were given a little bit of push maybe by their parents and by others to see that these are great opportunities. The group that's sitting behind us, Central Minnesota Manufacturers Association, has taken it upon themselves in their region to try to increase the visibility. I can't comment specifically on any of the schools, but in some places the community college is very well connected to the employers, visit them on a regular basis. In other cases, It seems like they aren't very well connected, so it seems like it's campus by campus. But there is a need for welders and jobs like that that are two-year degreed.
I mentioned that because I met last week with Chancellor McCormick about this very issue, because as I've kind of been traveling around the state the last 10 months, it seems like our Minsky campuses aren't aligned close enough with the employers in those regions to deliver what the employers need. I mean, it doesn't seem to be much point in delivering students, giving them a diploma, and then having it not... You know, that resume doesn't lead them to an employment path. So I think, and maybe it's something more appropriate to the higher ed community, but I do think we maybe need to nudge Minsky along a little bit to develop more customized training for the employers in the regions where the campuses are located.
You know, I just, an observation, Senator Bach, I don't think it's just a higher ed thing. This is the Minnesota Senate Jobs Committee, and I think it'd be appropriate maybe to get Minsky in here now that I've thought about it for a second, to talk about that customized training, what's going on in different regions. I think they do some of it, in fairness. It's not that they're totally out of it, but I don't think it'd be a bad idea to get them in here and say, you know, what's the connect? You know, we're all for jobs. The economy's in tough, dire straits. What are you doing specifically, and can you do more with the business community, manufacturing community, and go from there. Have them in here.
The chancellor specifically wanted to participate in this because of a similar. He wanted to balance this business finding with a survey they're doing themselves on how to try to get ahead of what kind of education is needed. So that was the reason, and I think it was a very positive reason, and some findings that would tell them, you know, this chart, for example, is at the high level, but that was the reason they wanted to, is to see if there was a way they could connect better to the business community, which I think is a good move.
Senator Koch.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I'd just like to thank Enterprise Minnesota for being here. They came out and visited a manufacturer with me in my district, who they helped greatly. Helped them set up a website, a more expansive website, and also get ISO 9000 certified. And we're hoping that's going to bring they had some layoffs, and we're hoping they're going to bring those jobs back plus in my area because of the work that Enterprise Minnesota did in part. So thank you. Just expanding, it's maybe one of my favorite subjects that Senator Bach has hit on. And what I'm finding in my area, we're sort of in this ring. We don't have any Minsky schools in our community, but we have them close. And some of even my high schools are taking on this role simply because manufacturers in my area are looking for skilled workers and not finding them. And so I've got St. Michael's Schools has got a very extensive program. They've gotten some grants available. They have 3D printers. They're really working hard in this area and with the help of the manufacturers. So it's sort of a private-public they're working together to get skilled workers. We also have the Wright Technical Center, which is a high school level educator in my area, and they're struggling to keep kids in the school. They're not getting the participation that they'd like to see, and they have some great programs, very needed by the community. And so I'm not sure if the whole answer is it's what they're not offering, but there's also, I don't know if there's a disconnect with the folks. If we have to do a better job of promoting those areas, or I'm not sure what the disconnect there is, Senator Bach, but they actually have a great program that they're not getting the students.
What do they call us? Senator Rosenfrisch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And those are two really good comments, and Senator Bach and Mr. Chair, I think it would be important to ask the relationship from Minsky with the VOTEC schools and how they – I believe there is a much stronger relationship. They are working together, but it would be interesting to find out where that is working and the direction, if they are still syncing. I'm just talking about the Minsky system down in Mankato and South Central Tech College, and they do seem to be working very well, but there was years that they did not, they were two separate entities, and now they have to be joined together. So that would be very interesting to know from this committee how that's working.
Sure.
That makes sense.
I think Senator Carlson, down your way, I think the Rosemont VOTEC has picked up on a few things, like the rail industry is growing rapidly, and I think they're doing some more stuff in nursing. and a couple other areas that I've lost for now, but I think they've been kind of fairly good at this,
at least my recollection. Situations, though, where, for instance, they had a fairly large welding program, but things get obsolete. Same with heavy equipment.
So they're cutting it.
That's what we were just, I was just telling Senator Bonhoff here that, for instance, heavy equipment maintenance, they've had a lot of interest in industry, but they didn't have the budget to be able to bring on the equipment that they needed to work on. So they did get donations, but the donations are always obsolete.
Yeah. So, all right, well,
Mr. Chairman.
Good discussion, Senator.
Mr. Chairman.
Amasone? Senator Salzman, excuse me.
Perhaps we had a bit of this conversation last week, I think, in this committee about there's also the issue of what students choose to go into and how are we engaging them and really exposing them to some of these areas, because MNSCU can have the programs, but if the students choose not to go into those areas, that's where I think we have the disconnect. And parents not being aware, perhaps, of all these opportunities. So I think it's not just MNSCU, it's also our K-12 system. I had a number of counselors in my office, and counselors play a very important role in where students decide to go with their careers, what kind of classes they take, and we're, 50th in the country in terms of counselors. So not to put a plug in for them today, but I think that's all part of this issue of how we're steering our young people. And there's been some discussions about how we reimburse our higher ed facilities. Are there areas where maybe we reimburse them more or offer different scholarship or else, you know, tuition to students who go into specific areas where we need, this training, which is probably something that's not how we've done it before. But, again, how do we steer young people who are talented into these areas? So it's a
big connect, isn't it? I mean, higher ed, lower ed, so to speak, and then their group. And, there's a lot of connections to be filling in the pieces here. Senator Bach.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Salzman, I took the bait. I wasn't going to get into the K-12 thing, but I just have to say, you know, all of the standardized testing that we've developed, and we all want accountability, but we're driving curriculum in schools through our testing. As money gets tight, of course, who wants to have a failing school, right? I mean, so what gets the emphasis? The things we test for. And as money gets tight, the other programs, like the technical and the industrial applications in our schools, fall off. And I do think that's a very important discussion for us to start to have. And Mr. Chairman, I was reminded of it, and most of you at this table probably know I've been a carpenter for 33 years. But my wife and I were in Las Vegas right before session. We stayed at the Monte Carlo, Mr. Chairman, and right next door, between it and Caesar's Palace, is a big new project going up called City Center. It's on 67 acres. It's a $9 billion construction project, and there are thousands of construction workers building it. There are cranes sticking up everywhere. And I looked out the window, and, of course, I like building stuff, so I'm intrigued by that.
You got pretty excited, didn't you?
But you know what I thought about? 20 years from now, who's going to build those buildings? Who's going to build them? I know the age of the people in the building construction trades, and there are a lot of them my age. And if our educational system is not giving this next generation of young people any exposure to the fact that these are very good occupations, who's going to build them? And it can't be just people that can't find another job. As I was talking to one of the cab drivers, and I asked all the cab drivers about the City Center project, interesting enough, one of them told me that 8 people have died on that construction project. That's unacceptable. And when you have people that aren't trained well enough, you have safety problems on projects like that. So I hate to drag that into this whole conversation with Senator Salzman. I couldn't help it. We got to have a discussion on how, if our educational system is fitting the needs of this state's employers going forward, because there is this big wave of retirements coming that has probably been postponed some now because of the current state of the economy and what's happened to people's pensions. But there is going to be some real opportunity, I think, if young people have the right skill set.
Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Bach, I just have to respond, as there are many of us who sit on education around this table. And Senator Sumpf, chair of K-12, feels very strongly about the importance of that kind of education. And so we are exploring how to make sure that it's part of college readiness and that we look beyond just traditional four-year college programs, but how are we going to also expose our young people to these kinds of careers? And, you know, we do think it's important, and we are trying to figure out how to walk back from some of the rigid testing requirements while maintaining accountability. And so that is a focus, and it will be this session.
Well,
Senator Bacchapala.
Chairman, maybe the easy way to find out is to see, I'll give you an example. In Senator Tomasoni's district, I know the community of Virginia pretty well, even though it's not in my district, but my carpenter office was there for the 21 years that I ran the union up there. And I'm told, and I didn't actually survey the numbers, but I'm told that in Virginia, in the 80s, they had 12 industrial education teachers in the Virginia High School. And I'm told today they have one. Now, the range is a blue-collar economy. It's probably not going to change much. I mean, as much as we want to move rural areas into technology and create diversified economies, you know, the range is probably going to be a natural resource-based economy. That's what we have to build off of. And there are going to continue to be a lot of blue-collar jobs there. But that number is troubling, that even in a region where we know that there is real opportunity in blue-collar occupations, that our high school in the core of the Iron Range has gone from 12 to one industrial education teacher. Something needs to be examined before it's too late. And we miss a whole lot of economic opportunity because we haven't, and the governor's obsessed with taxes, but the truth is, if a business can't find the workforce, they are not going to expand in your community. And it's a serious discussion, I think, Mr. Chairman, for this committee, is that we have the workforce available so that these employers have an opportunity to grow.
Senator Saltzman, did you have a...
Yes. Just a quick follow-up, Mr. Chair, is that I think, Senator Bach, that we're very much on the same page with this in that we've talked a lot about rigor in our schools, and that has resulted in more tests and book learning instead of engaged learning. And so I know a number of us are very concerned about this, and I think working with our K-12 committee, working with higher ed, to sort of find out so that we have some common policies that we're not going in different directions and operating in silos is a very, very good idea because, you know, having a skilled workforce with the skills that we need is extremely important, and I think all of us want to work on that. So I think we're all on the same page.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Koch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bach. Now I'll take the bait a little bit because I think as a business committee, we cannot ignore also the importance of taxes. And I'll bring it back to the manufacturing company that I met in my area. And we had a long discussion about the education. I totally agree. But they brought up the fact that they had this new machine and they were not having any trouble getting credit for machinery. They're not at all. They were able to go to the bank and get money to buy new machines, but they needed two sales guys to work different areas of the country. And they even had the two sales the two salespeople picked out, but they could not cash flow. They could not cash flow the salespeople. And what they were waiting for is they bought a piece of equipment. They had the sales tax that they were getting reimbursed for, but if they had, I believe there's a bill Senator Rest has that the sales tax would just be exempt from the sales tax on that capital equipment up front. And to them, that was $50,000, $50,000. And that would have hired their – I said, what would that have hired your salespeople? They said that would have hired those salespeople for a year if we'd have just been able to have that tax exemption up front. And with those salespeople, they were going to expand all in this business. And, again, they had 14 people laid off, and they fully expected if they could get the salespeople into work that they'd hire those 14 people back plus. So
Chair.
Senator Bach.
Mr. Chair, Senator Koch. if that provision is in the tax bill, yes, and I have to find $80 million to pay for it, but if I can find a way to get it in there, will you vote for the tax bill?
Thank you, Senator Bach, for your time. We'll see.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, just I don't know if this is a wrap-up or not, but
I think he's only
based on what Senator Bonhoff said about the Education Committee looking at industrial arts in the schools, and based on what the Chancellor said in front of the Higher Education Committee, that he believes that the Minsky system is very agile and is the system that is in charge of having the type of educational courses that can be nimble and adjust to the economy and provide jobs that the economy is allowing. It looks to me like we have a pretty good start on getting both the K-12 and the higher ed system into the spot where they're educating the people and creating the jobs that we need in this economy, because we actually can't buy our way out of this. We're going to have to work our way out of it. And putting people to work is the key here, I think.
But the systems are so intertwined. I mean, you can't catch it where Senator Bach and Salzman and...
I think we got a good start.
Yeah. Everybody
acknowledging it.
Just before this is over, I think this is really an engaging, interesting, for me, conversation that has to happen.
Mr. Chairman, one last example. I know a fella on the Iron Range who's a mine manager, very up in management in one of our mining companies. And to you education members, this is for you. He's got a teenage son in Hibbing High School who's carrying a 1.4 grade point average. And he told me, I don't think he's going to graduate. He said, all my son wants to do is turn wrenches. That's what he wants to do. And our system is failing him. And it does beg the question, of those 20-some percent of kids that don't graduate, how many are because maybe they just want to turn wrenches and our system's too inflexible for that? And that young kid can probably make a darn good living turning wrenches, but we're not going to let him get a diploma. True story, happened in December.
I think everybody over 50 years old that live in the community I'm from has worked in a packing plant or the stockyards at some time or another, and we had a Votech class in our high school that taught meat cutting, you know, but
Mr. Chair,
things change, but Senator.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just on what Senator Bach is saying, my district, Rosemont, Eagan, Apple Valley, I believe it's the fourth largest district in the state, so it has about 28,000 students and five high schools. And the problem is that oftentimes you don't have the kind of critical mass to be able to do some of these things, but critical mass isn't the only thing. Sometimes you need someone who is the what we used to call it in business, the evangelist. You need the evangelist to come there and say, I'm going to start a carpentry program. I'm going to start an automotive program. I'm going to start a ground school. So in Eagan, we actually have a ground school there where a person who is interested in flying can get their ground school done in high school. And to match that, Rosemont High School put in an automotive trade curriculum where if you're in Eagan High School, you will go over to Rosemont and you can do the automotive mechanic curriculum over there. But it takes a huge school to do it, and it takes, in those two cases, it's two very vital people who are pushing it. When the person at Eagan High School retires, which may be in the next couple of years, the ground school will probably go away. So it requires a lot more than just our mandating of tests and mandating of curriculum. We need to have some really interested and vital people that are put in there and encouraged to do it.
Okay, well, you guys have had a little break there, huh?
Nothing nothing like a great front row seat.
Yeah, you did. Deluxe seats in the front row. They're watching us.
For these good seats.
All right, why don't I think we'll continue on. We've got another presentation after.
We're almost to, we're really to a wrap up, but just as a last, you know, maybe in this case of the education, the recession is too good of an opportunity to pass up. You know, a parent should be looking for jobs that are building something these days. And Dunwoody Institute, for 7 years, had a falling manufacturing enrollment, and 2 years ago, with a renewed effort, now is filled. And I think it tells us something that if you get enough emphasis behind it, that the kids are interested in it. And a good example maybe to follow. The bottom line, we've covered the bottom line. Basically, the rest of the presentation somewhat sums it up. There's some mix to it. But I would like to go back to, and I'm not going to go back through this because there's four pages that are exact duplication of what we've discussed, and we might get back to this debate about education.
Don't do that. But we'll control that for a while.
But the bottom line is that a solid majority are pretty positive about their own organization, but the challenge is outside. And I think the one thing that surprised me the most was related to the workforce. And I think believe strongly that it reflects December. So I have to turn the direction a little bit to a program called Growth Acceleration Program, because I see seven senators who have had an opportunity to visit clients where the one-time grant of $750,000 2 years ago has now allowed Enterprise Minnesota to provide services to 67 companies around the state. And the beauty of it is, one, it's a one-for-one grant, so there's pain for the employer. They appreciate it. They get on a journey. And the other part that's, I think, is unique as we debate the challenges of what programs create jobs is the fact that as one of 59 affiliates of a federal program called MEP, Manufacturing Extension Partnership, all of our clients, 6 months after the service is completed, will get an independent audit of the satisfaction. And the satisfaction isn't, gee, do you like those guys and gals from Enterprise Minnesota? It's very specific. One, it says, you agree you did finish the service as promised, and they shouldn't be in the survey unless they said yes. Two, did you retain any jobs because of it? And if you say yes, how many? Did you create any new jobs? And yes, name the number. And then it goes on to say, did you increase your top line, improve your bottom line? Please quantify that for us. And if we don't get a 100 score, which we have for years and years and years, but I think this is really an interesting program because if you go to the last four quarters, our services, the CEOs that were surveyed, from about 160-some companies, said that we retained, these services retained and created 1,263 jobs. And so it's a measurement, and you can debate the measurements, but the program is a program that I think can provide results during this challenging time. 6 months ago, we all talked about creating jobs. Today, the manufacturers are talking about retaining jobs first to get on the next step forward. Part of the services that we provide are both process improvement, which we're very well known for, but also people improvement, the human capital part of it, training people how to be better supervisors. And these are really the services that are so important as the workforce ages, and we have to replace them with new people, and we have start having the age, culture differences, etc. So I could not pass having two microphones in front of me without reintroducing a number of you to that program. We thank you for it, for the one-time grant 2 years ago. We'd love to see something similar, and we'd even probably make it improved for the smaller companies because it's still very difficult to get companies under 50 employees to invest in the people the way they should.
I think on the right-hand side of your packet, there's a couple of sheets. One says Growth Acceleration Program, and it talks about the leveraged $750,000 state gap money has fueled a $15 to 1 return on the investment. And it's helped 62 manufacturing companies so far in Minnesota. And one of the sheets will show you that the where they're at. And it looks like it's a very geographically equaled, if that fits, geographically where they're located around the state. There's not just one or two areas. It looks like it's pretty well distributed all over. So you might want to look on this sheet and see if maybe nearby your town or in your town or something that this program has helped you. Okay? But it looks...
I'm sorry?
So I can bring it a little closer to home with some of you folks if you see Owatonna on there or whatever. But do we have an Owatonna?
We do.
Okay, well, we got Mr. Day. He was paying attention. But all right, any does that complete your Senator Scheidt?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was just going to say I was going to ask a question, but then you pointed to the sheets on the right. I wondered how many companies had been involved, and I toured one of those companies. Actually, I don't think it's on the list, but here, but Central Container Company and in Brooklyn Park. There's another company in Brooklyn Park as well. But I just saw in my Voyager Press, I saw Senator Tomassoni at Flow International, a picture of him there. And
he's everywhere.
I see that they're...
They on the list?
There, it's on
yeah,
here.
They're on there at Saks.
I just want you to know, I saw your picture in my paper. And there's interesting quotes from the Owatonna manufacturers I pointed out to Senator Day in here. They refer to a couple congressmen as a couple of clowns. I thought it was kind of funny on page 110. So Owatonna is reflected in here as well. This is a really interesting... I'm sorry, I had to point that out. But I want to thank them, and I think this is really smart money that... we've invested. See? Look at that.
Flow International.
Yeah.
Oh.
So I want to thank you for inviting us. I don't know how many people you got to invite. You said seven on this committee to different places, I'm sure.
That's a great question. We've had 18 legislative visits, and 28 legislatures have participated. And I would say that I love to tell people that most of these manufacturers would not have done near as much without this, but when the president or owner of the company says that they wouldn't have, it's very powerful. It also points out that there's a lot more behind the front doors of these. I always think of IRD Glass in Litchfield, 35 employees. I thought they probably made windshields or something. I didn't know, but when I got inside, I find out that they're doing very precision glass cutting for aerospace. They're doing for microscopes, for medical device. It's just phenomenal. And unless you'd stop in and take the tour, you would never know the kind of skills that they're looking for.
Senator Rosen.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kill and Mr. Mason, I'd like to go back to the health care. And about that article I'm supposed to write for your magazine. I do want to go back to, I was reading the final word from Mr. Mason on that. But also on your slide that said 64% of manufacturing firms offer some type of health care plan, but then it also says 59% of those firms do not offer wellness programs for employees. And I just wanted to state that 64% is dropping. That's known. You know, with all the work that we did on the health care reform bill last year, that is an area that's really dropping fast. In fact, in nursing homes, the trend now is to not offer any health care benefits. And I'm sure in manufacturing it's going to start getting that way, too, if we keep going down this path. But on this wellness program for employees, in the health care reform package, we put in some dollars to do prevention. And it was modeled off of four pilot programs in the state that received actually federal dollars. But they went straight to the employers to tell them how to do these wellness programs. This is very simple. There's no rocket scientist, math or anything to this. It's just give them alternatives and give them an incentive. So there are examples on getting that number, I think, increased, because this is an area. Prevention is one of the big parts of healthcare reform, and you cannot do healthcare reform without the prevention part. And I think the employers offer a very critical role in that whole movement. So I'm just saying that perhaps that's something that could be worked through in a magazine and offering the employers some options. This is what's worked in other areas. Very low cost, be creative, give an incentive. You know, our dollars are shrinking, of course, in this healthcare reform bill, in the prevention part, to be exact. And so we need all the help we can get to keep the prevention model moving. And so I'm asking for your help on that.
Well, one of our sponsors, RJF Agency, would love to have that conversation because they participated mainly around the health care because they do wellness programs for
Did you get that one? Okay. That it? Very good. I think you...
Folks, sir. Mr. Chairman, Senator Sparks points out that your committee just covered just about everything that the legislature covers. Health care, K-12, higher ed, job creation. You did
that's
it
right.
All
that's why we have a...
Taxes. You, I mean, you did
we have a very, very engaged
that's why he's
committee.
President.
That's why he's
glad
president.
We could participate. I thank you.
We have five, six committee chairs on here, a very influential minority members, and people just want to be on this committee, I guess. I don't know. I don't know if that's true. I don't know if that's true.
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
Senator Bonner, before
Mr.
You.
Chair, I just want to briefly thank you gentlemen, because as I'm going through the book, I see I'm actually quoted and named as to my comments when I visited the McQuay Company in my own community. So thank you.
That's why the book sold out. You, you picked up 2,500 copies of it.
Well, Mr. Chair,
yeah, she's pretending like she just saw the quote. But she bought them out.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think
Senator Latz, are you in there?
I don't think I'm in the book here. I can't support what they're.
We have an amendment coming out.
Autograph the book anyway.
Would you? Oh, look at that.
All right, that was good. I thought that was really interesting.
That's awesome.
Okay, Central Minnesota Manufacturing Association, Les Engel. Welcome. It's kind of fun to hear some good stuff once in a while. So welcome. Is the high-tech guy still bothering you up there? Oh, okay.
No, considering I'm an engineer, we're going to go with a simple plan.
Okay.
So,
identify yourself and continue. But
good afternoon. My name's Les Engel. I happen to be the president of the Central Minnesota Manufacturing Association. Should indicate this is a volunteer position. My real job is that I own and operate Engel Metallurgical, which is a consulting and materials testing firm, and we provide services all over the U.S., mainly in Minnesota, but a lot of other places and even outside the U.S. And have to tell you, I'm a metallurgical engineer. I'm not a politician. This is my first time to give a shot at this. We were encouraged to come and just tell it like it is.
We happen to have an engineer that is a politician, but forgive. and he's that good-looking guy right to your left down there.
Well, he'll understand then, at least. You
he's
know?
Probably the only one then, but good.
So this is a pretty new activity for me, but I want to thank everybody for inviting us to come and to be here. And before I sort of put together what my pitch was about, to tell you about Central Minnesota Manufacturing Association, but after sitting and hearing all of you talk about the education issues and the workforce training issues and all these different things, I just want you to know that, like, our manufacturing association is actively working on all of those issues. And, in fact, one of the questions I have for you folks as I listen to everybody and where they seem to be at is, how many of you are familiar with Discovery Academy?
The engineer.
The engineer is...
Has anyone heard of Project Lead the Way? Mm-hmm. Whoa, that's looking better. I would really encourage everybody, because I think it's the answer to some of the questions that came up of what's really going on. And I happen, as another project, happen to be involved with all those organizations too, so that's a separate thing. But it really was interesting to hear your conversation because, like I say, we have a workforce development committee that's part of our association, and they're actively working on that. And that includes people from the St. Cloud Technical College, St. Cloud State University, as well as the manufacturers, and also people from the high schools as well. So that's been a big effort that's going on because we really believe it's important, and we'll catch up with that a little later in some of the comments. But I think what's interesting is the history of how did Central Minnesota Manufacturing Association get going, and it was in December of 2007 that a handful of us, most of us that were involved with the WIB on the workforce councils and this, looked and said, you know, there isn't any organization that's really filling this role of how to help manufacturers, which is interesting, like I think you're looking for that same answer. And so we decided that December that, well, let's call together a meeting, and we'll just see who shows up. And so we organized it, and we revisited at the same time by, if you're familiar with Midwest Manufacturing Association, which is a little bigger umbrella organization, and we decided that we would work under their umbrella, but you were as our own association. So we sent out meeting notices, and the plan was in January to have our first meeting. And so when we started that, we thought everybody said there's about 10 people at this first get-together. How many people do you think will show up? Some people said, well, we'll be lucky if we get 25. I was the optimist. I was like, oh, I think we ought to get at least 50. Okay. Well, the meeting took place January 2008. It was January 24th. It was a breakfast meeting. It was at 7:30 in the morning, and it was minus 24 degrees below zero was the temperature. We had 103 people showed up that were manufacturers and suppliers to manufacturers from the whole region, and they came from all over. And we were like, wow, maybe we got a good idea. And it's really gone on like that for the whole time. You know, we have monthly meetings. Meeting attendance has ranged from like 45 to 98 people at meetings. We average about 60. We presently have 70 member companies. And out of that, and today while we're here, somebody brought up the question of, well, how many jobs does that involve? And we're like, never figured that out. So just amongst my friends over here in the gallery, you see, these are the other manufacturers that took the day off to come to see how this works. And so we added up that there's seven of us here. And 6 months ago, those seven companies had employment of 3,150 people. And today, unfortunately, it's dropped a little, but it's 2,890 people.
Why don't we have, where are these guys from? Or are they all guys? Where are you from, and what do you manufacture?
That's a great idea. Let them start. Right.
I'm Nick Weiss. We manufacture kitchen cabinets, crystal cabinets, and we have plants, two of them located in Princeton and one in Sauk Rapids.
How many folks you have working for you, Don?
A little over 400 right now.
Oh, boy. Hmm. And that business is down, though, isn't it?
Very down, yeah.
And you still have, oh, that's great. Sir, what are you from?
I'm Harry Larson. I'm with Enterprise Minnesota, and I'm on the board of directors with the Central Minnesota, and that's my role here.
Okay, I know that. Yeah, sir.
I'm Carl Schwinn with Sterrett TrueStone Technologies. We manufacture precision granite for semiconductor, flat panel displays, things like that. We had about 100 employees 6 months ago. We're down to about 50, 45 or 50.
A little slow right now.
Very slow.
My name is Tad Schupner. I'm a business development manager for Doherty Staffing Solutions. We supply industrial staff for the entry-level semi-skilled laborers. And as of last fall, we were averaging about 550 employees in the area.
Okay.
My name is Greg Jenham. I work for Milburn Design and Fabrication in Winsted. We make cheese equipment, cheese processing equipment. And we also do contract manufacturing services in metal fabrication. We've actually grown. We had about 70 employees about 6 months ago, and we're at about 85 now.
Great.
That's some work that we do in the wind tower industry that's taken off in the last 6 months.
Great, good. Okay.
Cheesy window. Right,
sure.
Cheesy here with Palco Machine. We're out in St. Michael. We have a machine shop. We do CNC milling and turning. Service the aerospace.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Anybody else?
My name's Steve Schwartz, and I'm from Articat. Scott Doyle is with me. He's also from Articat. We're in St. Cloud assembling engines, so we bucked the trend about 5 years ago. Instead of going overseas, we stayed in Minnesota and started assembling engines, taking it away from Suzuki.
That's right.
6 months ago, we had about 65 in St. Cloud, and we're down to 40 right now.
Statewide,
there's about 1,600. I'm not the best person to ask this question.
That's all right.
And we're down probably about 100, 150.
We should have a little snow this year, though, huh?
This is the first year that snowmobile sales went up in the last 10, so the snow does help.
Pretty quiet up north for a couple of years, or right, Tomasoni? With the snow, I mean?
No.
Oh, it's good.
Henry Fisher with the St. Cloud Area Economic Development Partnership. One of the businesses that couldn't be with us today was New Flyer USA. They manufacture transit buses. And their business is up. They've hired over 200 people in the last year. They plan to hire about 40 more this spring. They have a $4.3 billion backlog, so the transit bus business is very good.
Wow.
Now you got your transportation.
Hats around
me. Yep. Where'd Greyhound start? Princeton? No. Hibby. Oh, I was close. It's up. Hibby.
Not even close.
Same state.
Same state.
Picky. Straight up. Sorry.
I think there's some more of them behind me here. That
my name is Bill Brand. I'm the Chief Operating Officer at TEO Plastics out of Clearwater, Minnesota. We have 160 employees. We've gone down from 220. We're currently trying to expand our operation and hope to open up a new facility in Otsego, Minnesota. With new equipment and new expansion in medical packaging, we are primarily plastics thermoforming.
Good. Some good stories are here. We're still going. That's great.
I'm Sharon Jensen, Community Relations with Cold Spring Granite Company. We have about 750 employees in this quarry and fabricate granite products.
Wow.
Sell rocks. Okay.
Well, I think that explains that manufacturing is not dead in Minnesota, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And I mean, and out of that, we've got actually, in 1 year, we've got 70 member companies that have signed on to our organization already. So it's been an unbelievable success story. During that time, we got the whole thing organized. We have 6 working committees. One of them is workforce development, the very thing you were talking about. They're actively working on the interactions between businesses and the educational institutions and between the educational institutions. I've personally been involved in that, and that's been interesting. It's the best word I can think of. And we've managed also in that year to get a first grant award of $50,000. To be used for development and enhancement of employment and training and business development in our area. And one of the things that we learned as we started all this, if you haven't heard this, and this was from Deed Statistics, is that central Minnesota is the main economic engine for manufacturing for the entire state of Minnesota. So it's, and I have to tell you, I didn't grow up in Minnesota. So I never did understand where the story came about outstate Minnesota. It always struck me like the people who live in the Twin Cities must be one crowd and everybody else is some other crowd. And, you know, I grew up in Ohio. So, but in any case, it always struck me interesting that it was outstate. And then I learned from Deed that the outstate guys got all the jobs. You know, all the manufacturing companies.
And we're the in crowd, too.
Yeah. And, but... I mean, just in central Minnesota area, the manufacturing, the payroll is a little over $1 billion for just manufacturing. And that represents 20% of the entire payroll for that region. So it's really significant. And so out of all this, what we've come up with is a mission for our organization. And I think you'll have this on one of the sheets that you might have there, but basically to help the firms accomplish more together than alone. One of the fundamental issues we looked at was that sometimes everybody tends to see each other as competitors, and it's like, yes, you might be a competitor in one sense, but you really need everybody else to help you to survive in the environment that we're in, especially now. Because I should mention, like, we've had our meetings, and they range, the meeting topics are everything from workers' comp, lean manufacturing, synchronous workflow, and health insurance. So we've had people come in and talk about how to manage your health insurance and reduce your cost, and that was well attended. We feel that we're the vessel for advancement of area manufacturing, the broker, the empowerment, innovate, develop our competitive advantage, solve shared problems, compete at a world-class level. And big thing was the strength and the synergy created and shared by the producers, suppliers, services, research, and all the training institutions. And promote careers in manufacturing, be proactive about workforce development. And the bottom line, the way we see it as manufacturers, is what are we trying to do here? And some people would say, well, obviously you're just trying to make money. And obviously everybody is trying to survive that way. But it's really about what we saw as a bigger issue is to support and grow high-wage jobs, healthy communities, and outstanding schools. Because without those schools, which you folks were discussing earlier, we won't have any workers. And, in fact, one of the statistics that came out of Deed was that for central Minnesota, the prediction is after the baby boomers are truly gone, we'll still have enough folks that our population demographics won't be like, say, here in the Twin Cities where they'll see a huge drop in people. We'll have enough folks, but right now they'll all have the wrong skills. They won't have the skills that are needed for the jobs. So this is where the training thing comes in. And things we're doing about this, which comes in your whole bit of how do you get the message out, one of the ideas we got is in April, we're having, if you've all heard of things like the Parade of Homes, we're having the Parade of Manufacturers. And this is going to happen on April 25th on a Saturday. Right now we have, I think it's somewhere between 15 and 20 manufacturers in the region that have all agreed to have an open house on that Saturday. And the idea is to invite all the young people. We've quickly realized that we have two issues. One is the bit you mentioned earlier of exposure to young people to careers, to even know what the opportunities are. Then we discovered there's another hang-up, and it's the parents of those children. And so when somebody comes home and says, I went to a fab shop and I really want to be a welder, and turns out that you can now be a welder and it pays about $25 an hour and it's a pretty clean environment, and mom and dad are, oh, no, you don't want to do that. You know, that's a dirty old job. And anyhow, all those manufacturing jobs, you know, they all went to China. So you wouldn't want to do that. And they talk the child out of it.
Yeah.
And yet you might be one of them that you just mentioned earlier about the child that really wanted to be the mechanic. It's like you need to encourage him, not talk him out of it. But in any case, so we're going to have this go on for that day and invite everybody. We've got the Times has agreed to support it and put out a special supplement to let the whole community know. So it's basically an invitation to the entire community to come see these jobs, see what's really going on in these manufacturing firms. You know, so then it gets down to the point that that's how we came to be. And then the question of, so why are we here? And I sit here wondering, good point. But as I thought about this, it was like, it's really important, we decided inside our group, that we needed to have a better relationship with our political leaders. Because as we started to meet with some of them, odd times and strange places, the comment was, well, you know, we never see many manufacturers.
Where are these strange places?
Well, you never know. You know, it could be Panera's.
We might not want it.
Not here. but I do know that some of the legislators are out and about. We see them, you know. That's the good news. And but I think that it was like to develop that relationship. You know, I thought about it. It's like it would have been nice if we could whip in here and say, boy, we've got this solution all figured out for you. And I thought about it some more, and I thought we came down on a bus. We could have put the $5 billion in a bus, and then you just have it all taken care of. And I thought, well, nice thought. It won't work. Well, then I thought about it some more, and I guess what I hadn't considered was the fact when I looked around at the people on the bus is that we did have the money in the bus. It's in terms of the manufacturers who generate the jobs that's going to make the money to change the economy. It's just we didn't have quite $5 billion in there, but we're working on it. And I think that it was to develop that relationship. We'd like to think we didn't come here in the sense of looking for money per se. We'd like to be part of the solution instead of part of the problem. And at the same time, we do have some issues that will show up in the packet you have of things that we thought about and think we need to work on that more. We've been encouraged by some of the legislators we met with this morning to stick with that. And I'd like to think that somehow we figure out a way that we can come back to visit on a more regular basis and really look at the different issues and be able to give you some what I consider the grassroots information of what's really going on.
Well, we're looking for help around here, too. So, you know, we want your
right.
input. So thanks for coming down.
But I think that's the big item, and you've met all the folks. I'd like to thank all of you for having us here. And
you might get us a roadmap and the date for that 23rd or 25th of April.
You bet.
Maybe a couple of members would be interested in.
We'd really encourage you to come.
Walking around, seeing what's going on up there.
But we're hopeful that we can get a lot of the young people with their parents to come visit and see what's really going on. I mean, it's the bottom line is, like I said, all the jobs didn't go to China. They're alive and well. Most of them are higher tech, require more skills.
Chairman. Very good. Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Engel, thank you so much. That was very interesting, and I really appreciate that all the people came with. You all came together on the bus. That's
yes,
great.
No, we're looking for a bigger crowd, but there's some people back there working, trying to keep the place afloat. You know.
Well, I hope that they'll go back and say what a great committee this is. And, Mr. Chairman, thank you for having this meeting. I did want to ask you, because I'm not sure I'd be able to get your perspective on that question on the unemployment comp reform issue. I don't know what a lockout or tagout is.
Safety issues?
Because we do talk about unemployment comp in here, don't we? And I just wanted to know about that. What does that mean if you violate a lockout or tagout?
Oh, well, I mean, if you have safety violations or anything like that, why, normal, most companies, that is so serious that it's an immediate dismissal.
Mr. Chairman.
And so in the end, though, when you go through the unemployment issue, this person's now been terminated for cause.
I understand that. I just wondered what is a lockout or tagout. The term doesn't automatically obvious to me.
Sure. Basically, we're going to go inside a vessel, and there's a big agitator in there with a big motor that stirs everything up. But all the stuff's out, obviously, and we're going inside to work on it. There's a motor that runs that big agitator. And before anybody can go in there, everybody has their own lock and a key. And there's a system whereby you lock your lock onto the system of the switch. So there's absolutely no way anybody can turn on the agitator while you're inside the vessel, because that would be seriously bad. And so this is when they talk about lockout. It's that each person has his own lock and key, carries the key in his pocket, so that there's no way to turn it on until everybody's out and take their locks off.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I thought I knew it was some sort of technical thing and I had never heard it before. Okay, I understand.
It'll become important when you're climbing in that vessel.
I'm wondering where
the switch is.
I'm going to be sure to check everybody's key. Yeah.
Good. We're more used to lock up.
Senator Tavassoni, did you have a...
Mr. Chairman, can you comment on the discussion we had earlier, right? And you did alluded to a couple of things, but how do you see the Minsky system adjusting or helping you educate the people for the jobs that you have available? Is it as good a system as we can have? Are they cooperating? Do you find that you're getting the people you need? What's your read on that?
I would say the short answer is yes. I'd have to tell you it wasn't always that way. On the other hand, I think a lot of it, and I don't know if it's coming directly out of Minsky so much, although part of it is because of the way some of the funding went on. Like, they've funded some centers of excellence that have required the technical colleges to work with the four-year universities. And that part of it has made great strides. I mean, I've been involved in that. And 5 to 8 years ago, my answer to your question would have been, it's terrible. And, you know, in fact, almost at a level that I would look at pathetic. And, I mean, and I've gone to meetings as the business person. I went to a meeting, and I learned that there's these terms they have, and one of them is about whether you accept each other's credits. Now the word escapes me, whatever it is. And so, like, if you go to the tech college in St. Cloud State, and then you wanted to go to St. Cloud State University.
Transfers
of these things. Why? Well, they wouldn't accept the other guy's credits. And they've spent the last 2 years feverishly working on that and have gotten a lot of progress in that area. And I remember going to a meeting where I was supposed to encourage them for manufacturing. And I looked at them, they're getting ready for their meeting. I said, I'm here not to ask you about whether you're going to do it or not, just when you're going to be done. It just doesn't make any sense. But they've made, I think, some really big strides, at least in our area, between the tech college and the university there. And we've also the tech college involved with Bemidji State, which has a center of excellence up there.
Mr. Chairman, what about in the area of somebody who might need retraining in your business that you may need to send back to the tech? Are they providing the opportunities, the education, the courses?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. No, I think the tech college was actually the best at that, because I think they understood it from their original charter of they were there to train people to do jobs. The university now has really picked up on that, for St. Cloud State at least, and have people to provide customized training, which I think what you're talking about, to be able to do that. And so there's been a lot of progress in that area. And like I say, one, our workforce committee, that comprises all those folks, and they spend a lot of time working on that just as part of our organization as well.
Okay. Senator Saltzman.
There. On another point, Mr. Chair, I see that on your legislative issues you have the shared work program versus full unemployment. And we've had a little bit of discussion on that in this committee. And I also know that in Mr. Kill's report on page 95 at the bottom, there was some discussion. I sat in on one of these discussions, and there was some discussion about how businesses could share their share employees at a time when there was a downturn, and instead of laying somebody off, might there be another company who could use the expertise of an engineer or someone? So could you go into a little bit more depth with that? Because I think that's something that we've talked about. I've really enjoyed hearing about all the good things that are going to happen, but at the current time, as we see layoffs, what could we do to keep people working? Do you have some experience with that? Or
I'm probably not the best one to talk to that. I got to look over here to my crew, who is the one that was behind that one. Because was that Nick?
Yeah, I guess it was our HR person who was talking about it, and it's either one or the other plans. Mm-hmm. They're not flexible enough, and I think from our standpoint, we want to retain good employees, and we want to retain our workforce, yet the economics doesn't always dictate. So you either have to be on the shared work or you're on full unemployment. You can't kind of do both. And what we wanted to do is try and do some of each, because we know we had to maintain some of that. But it's inflexible. It's one or the other, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Salzburg?
Okay. So perhaps, Mr. Chair, just to kind of think about that, we might want to talk to find out some more from people if there's some opportunities for us. And I think that's what would be helpful for us to know, is if there are specific cases you could share with us so that we could explore what is our role in maybe helping that
happen. We'd be happy to do that. In other words, if you're looking for more information, that's the whole point, to be here to provide that dialogue and those details. Because this was our first cut at this. I mean, for the whole crew here, this is the first visit. So that was
a very good first visit.
Yeah, it was an adventure.
Nice. Thank you. Thank all of you.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, we might just want to tell you that, yes, this committee is normally this jovial.
That's good.
Well, what we try to do is add a little levity to our hard work once in a while, just keep the spirits up and keep people, feeling
As a business
good.
Owner, I can tell you a sense of humor is a critical
piece. Yeah, I think I do that in my other life with my employees, and just touch a little bit and smile. And
it's way ahead of crying,
Yeah, it's better than crying, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, I think a very interesting meeting, and thanks for the participation from the members. Very good.
No meeting Wednesday.
No meeting Wednesday.